Merkle Media.
Welcome back to another motherfucking episode of Kill the Mockingbirds with your host, Sean Chris and Joel Thomas. I am the truther community's worst nightmare. They want nothing to do with me because I challenged the very fabric of their being, brat. Brat.
Hey! What is up, y'all? Let's do the housekeeping. We always like to get that out in front. Just, you know, so you guys know, keep you guys informed, because sometimes people don't know things. We had a couple people hit us up about the 40 Airwaves to try to figure some stuff out. So if you are looking for more information about 40 Airwaves, you can go to killthemockingbirds.com, or we also have, I believe it's pinned, right? Is it pinned to the Spotify? Or I think it's like 2 months ago. We'll post it in the Telegram. I think we'll try to do that or something like that. The informational podcast that we did, telling everybody about the times and the breakdowns of when the event is going to not just happen, but like some of the, not necessarily performers, the schedule is not set for when the podcasts are going to go, but like which days and such and such.
Yeah, if you go to Spotify, it's on Spotify at the top. So go to Spotify. At the top of Spotify, it's the first, it'll say trailer, but it's actually the ad that we did for the 40 and Airwaves Ultimate Podcast Conference. So all the info's there, but it is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6th, 7th, and 8th. Friday, it's going to start at 5 p.m. Saturday, 8 a.m. is when the doors open. And then Sunday, similar, 8 a.m., we'll meet at the Ada Bowling Alley for the breakfast on the way out. That's when the starting times are for all of it. So just so people know, it's not super clear when you go to get the tickets. But when you go get the tickets, there is a lot of info there. All you got to do is killthemockingbirds.com. You can buy your tickets there. Also, all the lodgings and everything else is in that link tree that you get to from killthemockingbirds.com. So it's not too hard to do. Also at killthemockingbirds.com, we talk about our disinformation section. We've got a lot of stuff up there. We're pretty much updating every week or every other week with documents. The last one that we did, we put a lot of Trump documents in there that he had signed, some executive orders during his presidency, because we talked about Trump last week. So you can go on there and actually see those where he signed them. So we're giving you guys a lot of the info that we do research on, the actual documents, because I think that's important for people to see, especially if you're talking to somebody and they're asking for proof. You can literally go to killthemockingbirds.com and pull.
Open source, baby.
Right.
Kill the Mockingbirds believes in open source, so everybody can get the information out.
And we're trying to do it in a way that people can have access to the actual documents. Again, that those are important because those are things that don't go away, that these guys write theses and all kind of scientific documents, like the one we did about transgenders, which was very interesting and ties to autism. These are mainstream documents, mainstream researches that have been done that nobody talks about. There's a reason for that. They don't talk about it, but we are actually giving you access to a lot of that stuff. So you can go there and find a wealth of information.
And if you're in the Midwest area, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, man, even if you're across the country and you are going to make it out to 40 and Airwaves, I hope that I see you there in a brand new Nephilim Portal baby shirt, right? I mean, that would just be, I think, the tip of the iceberg. Might as well get it. And we got something fire coming soon. And when we're ready to announce that, I think that one's going to even, we're just going to keep hitting you guys with some great designs. But that Nephilim Portal baby has been going through the roof. A lot of people are really loving it, getting great feedback. Appreciate everybody that has took the time to purchase that and the brat, you know, killer bird shirt, a bird killer. Always, man, I don't know what's lately. I've been dyslexic. I don't know. Like my brain flipped to dyslexic. And then we got the classic butt cheeks tight. Any of those three shirts and possibly before, and I'm pretty sure it is, wink, wink, I'm winking right now. There's going to be the new one before you get to Ada, Ohio, Fortin Airways. And check out all the merch, and we appreciate everybody. And I think there's something else that we usually ask people about, which they've been kind of coming through, man. We kind of called for action, and I think they came through. What do you think?
Yeah, we said we needed more 5 stars, and you guys really came through this past week. Y'all were killing the 5 stars on Spotify, killing them on Apple. Just so you know, too, on Apple, if you're out of the country, we see those through a app called Chartable, because a lot of those get lost in the algorithm when they're from overseas, even though they do eventually add in, but initially they don't show up. Even a lot of the reviews that you guys write, they at least show up in Chartable, so we do see them. So today I'm actually going to read 3 from overseas, because they're the ones you won't actually see if you're in the States and you're looking at the app itself, but we do get them. So I wanted to read 3 of those, and then I'll read a couple Spotify's too. But we've got great show. Just love this podcast. Talent and realness overload. Loved your ginger snaps the other day, Joel, about your experience in the Masons. Thank you both for speaking from your core. Kari, aka Mam in Georgia. And this is Kari Mim from Canada that sent us this. So we really appreciate that. Kari, I hope that I'm saying that right. Maybe Carrie, that could be one of the two. So,
oh, Canada. I didn't say blame Canada, you know?
Right. We really appreciate that, guys. We've got a booyah, dog. Oh, man, just a soulful spirit from across the pond. Just want to say I'm your top fan in the UK. Always my first podcast. If the day you boys hit it right where it needs to be hit. Truth, laughter, and man, yours music is banging. All the love I can give to you all, brat, bird killers. Oh, I got the t-shirt. Thanks. An old soul. God bless Darren. So this is Darren from Great Britain. We really appreciate that, Darren. And we do remember seeing that name, Darren, come through a few times buying, I think, all the shirts. So
I think he did. We appreciate that a lot, man. He's always supporting.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we've got another one. Buckle up, boys. In the immortal words of Samuel L. Jackson in Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts. This is EJK369 from Canada as well. Really appreciate it. All the love from the UK and Canada, guys. We've got a couple from Spotify, and this is from the Trump one. We got Vic Man. Thank you for sharing this information. I was a Trump supporter, but now I'm on the fence. I don't really think it matters who you vote for. The powers that be are going to put whoever they want in office. Agreed. You guys know how we think here. These guys are selected, not elected. We know that the episode, for the most part, the guys that are with us now are on board with it. But we do know we got a few guys that got their butt cheeks tight, baby. They got them super tight with the last episode. And generally speaking, I think some of the Trump guys just completely skipped over the episode. They didn't want to listen to it. They wouldn't listen to it because if they did, it would break their matrix. We do have Ingrid Dawn Harrington. I love Lights Off. Great song, guys. Great job. Appreciate that. And for anyone that doesn't know, Sean and I both do music. You can type in Joel Thomas or Sean Chris on any music streaming platform, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, whatever. Type our names in, our music will come right up. We've got tons of it. If you listen to any of the music at the end of the show, that's us. It's always us. It won't be anybody else. It'll always be us. So on that note, I think we got the housekeeping out of the way, Sean.
I think so. Before I'd say one more thing, I do think the people that... our big Trump people were a little bit, they just either pass it or they go,
you're breaking my heart.
And we're going to, I think you're right. Let's just get into it.
I'm the boogeyman, and I'm coming to get you.
I can think you kind of see where we're going. Man, some people are going to hear sometimes, they'll be like, man, is this a wrestling podcast? We're going to trick a few people. They're going to get a quick education.
Just as they showed up in that certain 20 minutes on the episode we did with AI, Appalachian Intelligence. I'm like, man, these guys are like, oh, this is a wrestling podcast. I didn't know I came into conspiracies and old world stuff about Nephilim, but yeah, no, it's wrestling's great. For anybody that doesn't know, Sean and I both love professional wrestling.
It teaches you about, and it teaches you about politics.
It does teach you about politics and life. I can attribute anything that goes on in wrestling to life, any facet of life. And for the people that are like, how can you like that? It's fake. Well, I'm going to tell you why. Because they tell you it's fake. Not like the other sports out there that don't tell you and then it is fake. So that's why I do like it. It's a great story.
And plus, I think people forget that you do need to have stuff to unwind. And I think that's what we're kind of doing here. And not that it's just, to me, this is we're pumping the, not pumping the brakes, but look, man, we've been going hard. And then there's so much craziness out the world. I think sometimes we just have to take back and think of other stories that are still relevant and important, but it's not as heavy as topics of like where we're going at everything. Sometimes we just want something we can all agree on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody could agree on that there's melon heads.
Melon heads, man. And these are in our neck of the woods too, Sean. So these guys are all over the place. It's in American folklore in Ohio, Michigan, Connecticut. So melon heads are most of the time described, they're like small humanoids with big bulbous heads. And they emerge from hiding places and attack people. Now, there's varying degrees of attack, too. Sometimes they're just scaring people off. Sometimes they're trying to harm people physically. Some are even said to actually eat children. So that's the other part of it, is they actually eat children. But they all have a little bit different folklore to them, depending on what part of, you know, the Mideast, Midwest that you're in, right? It's just, it varies a little bit, but then some of the stories are very similar as well. So I think we're going to kind of start in Michigan first about these melon heads, how they came to be, and then we'll bleed on into some of the other places. And then you and I will kind of wrap it up with what we think melon heads could be, because I think they're not just this cryptid that people say they are. I think there's some other things they could be. Maybe they're masquerading as this particular cryptid called melon heads, and maybe they have a deeper purpose in what their actual purpose is.
And you got to remember, it's the telephone game, man. So a lot of this stuff through time, even though there's factual things being told, but as telling this person that told, most of this information has been passed down. That's why it's this core is pretty close together, but everything else can be a little bit looser. And then I think also things change and adapt, right? Like I think the ones, like we were saying in Michigan, we're going to talk about the ones in Michigan are quite different from the Ohio and Connecticut ones. That could be what we'll talk later is why, or what we think they are and why we think they are.
Yeah, for sure. So the melon heads of Michigan, they're said to reside around Dor E. Felt Mansion, and this is in Holland, Michigan. And I say Holland, Michigan, because that's going to be important later on in this presentation that we're giving you today of areas and what weird stuff goes on in certain areas of Michigan. But they've been seen in forest areas of Ottawa County. And according to one story, they were originally children with hydrocephalus. Now, hydrocephalus, I want to break down what hydrocephalus is so people understand what hydrocephalus is and why this is attributed to these melon heads. So it's the buildup of fluid in the ventricles deep within the brain. So the excess fluid increases the size of the ventricles and puts pressure on the brain. So the fluid normally flows through the ventricles and bathes the brain with and spinal column. But too much pressure causes the fluid to damage the brain tissues, and it causes a bunch of brain function problems. So it can happen at any age, but generally speaking, it happens among infants and adults 60 and over. So as of these days, there is a surgical treatment for it that can help restore and maintain normal cerebrospinal fluid levels. But back then, especially when these legends and stories were coming out, this wasn't the case. There were doctors that were trying to figure it out, and they were testing. And that's kind of how this story starts with, is there's these children, and they lived at Junction Insane Asylum near the Felt Mansion. So this entire hydrocephalus that I said, when those buildup of the fluid in the cavities or the ventricles deep within the brain happen, it swells the heads. So the heads get massive.
And you got to remember, when you're an infant, a baby as an infant, remember they have soft skulls. It's that. So when you're getting that fluid at such a young age, that's how it is able to expand. It may, now, if it was us, it might just blow out, right? Like as you get older, you may have a little bit or you have bulges, but for sure, that's like why you hear, in my opinion, from what I've seen of it, you see those big, like more bulbing or like oversized, like almost cartoonish oversized, but that's because they were so young. And when you're talking about the insane asylum, the crazy part too is that like there's more experiments. Like, so when we go back to like just people always talk about MK Ultra, right? And like, hey, this experiment, there's multiple experiments that happen. And there's not only government experiments that happen, but people, just regular scientists that want to play a part in humanity, or that's what, whatever they're determined to find out. And I think that this played a big part in what's happening, at least in the Michigan story.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think so too. And so these kids basically endured physical and emotional abuse because of all of the experiments that were done on them in this insane asylum. So they were using this insane asylum as like a off the grid hospital, basically is what they were doing, right? But it ended up making these children go crazy. They became feral, and they were actually released into the forest surrounding the asylum. So the Allegan County Historical Society.
Well, there's a couple of stories, because they also there's also a story that they didn't just get released, that they killed the doctors and the staff there, and that's how they escaped. There's like a couple different stories of it.
Right. So this is the first story, and the Historical Society said that the asylum never existed. Although, and this is funny, they said that the asylum never existed, but that this place was actually at one point a prison. So it kind of makes sense that it could have been an off-the-grid asylum. The place existed. We know that from the Allegan County Historical Society. They said it wasn't an asylum, but it was a prison. Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Well, kind of sounds like the same thing to me. So, you know, it's that, you know, we always talk about it whenever we've got, you know, three letters or people in power that want to change the narrative of something, they'll change the name of something to try to move people's minds off of thinking about it in one way. It's like, well, it wasn't an insane asylum. It was a prison. So clearly the rest of the story's wrong, because that's wrong. When that's not actually the case. So there was a Lake Town Township manager talked to the Holland Sentinel and said that he'd heard tales as a teenager, and his friends used to call him Wobblehead. So that was one of the other names that they said that they were. But not only that, that mansion was said to have housed the children as well. So it wasn't just the asylum that they lived in, it was also that mansion as well. So that was the other part of the Felt Mansion. But they said when they were released or when they escaped, because again, like you said, some versions said that they devised a plan to escape and they killed the doctor that abused them, and they had no places to hide the body. They actually cut it up in small pieces and hid it around the mansion. So they said it did happen in a combination of the mansion or the asylum, depending on who you're talking to. One time, sometimes it's one or the other, is what they said in this particular story. But there's been stories too of teenagers who broke into the mansion and saw ghosts of the children and actually saw the shadows of the doctor's murder coming from lights off the open doors. So this is seen later on when there were people that walked up in this particular Felt Mansion. So people saw the death of this doctor, whoever he was, this, you know, mad scientist, basically, that was doing work on these kids. So I'm not saying this can't be true. I think there might be some other layers to it that we don't know about. Maybe we explore some of that as we go today.
Yeah, and some of the things that make sense as well is if they did escape, say, like, they have this fluid in their head, because this is a real condition. This is a neurological condition. Yes. That, like, you know what I'm saying? This is not something that doesn't happen. And combine that with maybe being experimented on as well. You know, like, what does that do as well? And when they left, I think some of the lure and some of the belief, at least people around that I've talked to or you've seen videos of, is that they escaped. And the reason some of them are like savage humanish is because they've been living in the woods and the only humans that they've ever encountered were torturing them. And when you first started talking about like the prison slash insane asylum, wink, wink, you know, like you said, same thing. It also reminds me a great deal of like when we talked about Paris Hilton, right? So that's how I relate to it being real. Now, again, now some of the fantastical parts of the story, which parts are real and which parts are not, that gets murky at times. But I do believe, in my opinion, that there was always kids in that asylum. And I think the kids in the asylum and some of these other areas that we're going to discuss, I think they're all linked. And I think it's similar experiments. You know what I'm saying? And I think that there's deeper layers to it.
Yeah, and I'm going to go real crazy later on and even jump even further outside the box and even suggest that maybe it wasn't children at all. And it was a whole different set of experiments that were actually going on there. And the children were actually a cover story for what was really going on in these particular areas and these testing facilities, which I think they were. So I agree with you there. It did remind me eerily of the Paris Hilton. I thought the same thing when I was going through this, how they take these children, not just from the rich and famous, but children all over and do different experiments on them. Whereas I think maybe the rich kids or the kids from influential families are brought there to MK Ultra into what they're going to become. I think these other kids that go in there are for other testing. It's not all the same type of testing. They're doing a lot of different things, which I think could have happened in these facilities too, especially when you've got multiple reports of what these facilities were, prison, insane asylum, hospital. You don't know exactly what it was. I would just say testing facilities is what I would say when it comes to what was going on in these particular places.
And I don't think of it, and then like you're saying, I'm with you. Like, I know there's government testing, but I don't know if that's what you're thinking, but I was like thinking more too on another lines of like magical, like conjuring, you know what I'm saying? I got a little humunk feel, you know what I mean? Like a little humunk feel to it.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to get to that part of it. I think we should switch on over to Ohio, though, and talk about where the Melonhead stories are pumping out of there, mainly associated with Cleveland and specifically the suburb of Kirtland in Lake County. Now, according to the local lore, they were originally orphans under the watch of a mysterious figure known as Dr. Crow. And the name Crow is spelled differently depending on who's telling the story. You got the original version, C-R-O-W, then you've got K-R-O-H-E, K-R-O-H, or C-R-O-W-E. And I'm going to say why that's important later on when we get to this magical piece that you're talking about. I'm going to tell you why that's important for that. But it said that he performed unusual experiments on the kids, and they developed large hairless heads and malformed bodies. So it does say that the children were already suffering from hydrocephalus, but he injected more fluid into their brains. So he wasn't trying to help them. He was actually trying to create something. He was a real mad scientist. So it wasn't like he was the mad scientist that was trying to find a cure for this. It was, hey, let me use what they already have to create something else. Maybe he was trying to, you know, you never know. If this was a true mad scientist, you say, well, if we're making their brains bigger, we're going to make them more adept in being able to use maybe some sort of psionic energy or maybe some sort of mind control that we could utilize for them.
Moving things with your brain, you know what I mean? Countless like genetics, like even just to be like, hey, maybe we could add this gene in here because this is the early stages, or not early stages because that started even before, but also what's interesting is in this Kirtland, Ohio, is that we're talking about Kirtland, Ohio, right? Correct?
Yes, Kirtland.
There's also a crybaby bridge there. That's interesting.
There is. And what's really crazy about the crybaby bridge, this day you can go to that bridge and you can hear cries coming from that. Now, what's also interesting about crybaby bridge, because this is where it said that women who wanted to get rid of babies that they had, whether it was by, you know, say they had a rich man's baby and they needed to get rid of it, or they couldn't take care of this baby. And this is way back in the day, right? This is not when abortions were readily available. So they just got rid of kids. They were dumping them off this bridge. This is just one of many crybaby bridges, guys. There's crybaby bridges all over the U.S., but this is one particular one. But oddly enough, the children, and it's part of this legend, the children killed Dr. Crow. Very similar, though, to what happened in Michigan, where they killed this doctor that was doing experimentation on him. They burned the orphanage where they were being tested on, and they retreated to the surrounding forest and supposedly fed on babies. So they actually ate babies while they were in the woods. So it was said that they snatched babies from people. Maybe these women that were dropping these babies off at this crybaby bridge, they were waiting down there. Like, oh, it's a free meal. You know what I mean? It makes sense.
That's a lot of people believe, you know what I mean? Because it's right there. It's probably something to do with
it. I don't doubt it. And, you know, the whole thing with Dr. Crow, though, it gets really interesting. So there was these mainstream researchers that came out and they said that he didn't likely exist. So, yeah, of course they did. I mean, even if they had evidence he existed, they're going to say that. But there's a few stories about him. There's two different stories about him. There's actually a bad story, and there's a really good story about him. So this is the very interesting part. This is where it kind of delves into, you know, what was he actually doing there? So they said that Dr. Crow, this is going to be our first story. This is going to be the bad story of Dr. Crow. He lived in a secluded house on Wisner Road in Kirtland, Ohio. Some say he was married, and they said that his wife was unable to have children. So that was part of the reason that he wanted to do testing on these kids, was to have children around. Some accounts say that they had a child, but the child suffered from hydrocephalus. And what he did was he took all these other kids that had it and just did massive amounts of testing on them to figure out what the problem was, so then he could cure his own kid from the same disease. And they said that he might not have been a real doctor, or some of the stories said that he was stripped of his medical license, but it didn't stop him from working because he became a guardian of a number of orphan children. So he basically became a kind of like you would now foster care, but he picked kids that had this particular problem, this hydrocephalus, and brought them in. And they definitely became victims to all of his crazy medical practices. And they said that, possibly to attempt to help his kid, he put these other kids through absolute torment, and they were malformed, and the kids, they looked like melon heads, and they became these madmen in their own right. And Dr. Crow continued to grow more and more insane, and the children ended up killing him and running away. And they became free from collective captivity. The only problem was when they ran off in the woods and they were free, they had no place to go. And he was the only adult they'd ever dealt with. So they ended up being in the woods and breeding together and making more melon heads, is what's said to this day. That's the bad story that we hear of Dr. Crow.
Yeah, of Dr. Crow. But it's even wilder, like, and I know you're going to get into it, but it just trips me out. It's like, they're like, oh, he's so crazy. But then there's a whole other lure of, they're like, what a great guy, man. Love this dude, man. He's just a guy trying to help some kids.
Yeah, it's so crazy. So like the second story, so it's actually like the complete opposite. It's like if you flip the coin and you were already on heads, now you're going on tails of who Dr. Crow is. So instead of him being a mad scientist, he was a gentle, loving man. He was seeking only to help children suffering from hydrocephalus. Now, out of the goodness of his heart, he took all these orphaned, abandoned, and unwanted children and gave them a safe and secure place to call home. The neighbors called them melon heads, but they knew that the melon heads loved the good doctor and he was a good father. This is coming from the neighbors. They said that he showed unconditional love and acceptance, and he kept them secluded in his hideaway on Wisner Road, which we talked about, and he shielded them from all the nasty stuff that they had run into in the real world. But eventually, he suddenly dies of natural causes, which I don't get that part of it, because you don't suddenly die of natural causes. You're kind of working your way towards natural causes. It's not like a sudden death, which I thought was kind of weird. So the kids freak out at that point because they don't have anybody to feed them, clothe them. They've relied on him their whole lives. So they end up setting the house on fire. They burn Dr. Crow's body, and then they flee to the woods. And then they take their anger out on anyone that they run up on. So the locals at that point know not to stray too far from the old Crow property. And a lot of curiosity seekers did go in looking for trouble. And they were the ones that basically either got eaten or taken away. I mean, these melon heads were even said to kidnap kids, eat them. They stole livestock, pets, and the last phase was really cannibalism. That's when they were eating babies and, you know, tearing into children, because eventually they grow. They were, you know, small humanoid creatures, but, you know, as they got older, they got bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they had like razor teeth, deformed limbs.
It's almost like this almost reminds me of like a chimpanzee, you know, like, oh, it's all cute. Look at this cute little melon head. They grow up and they're vicious.
Right. Right. So, you know, that's basically the Ohio story. Now, I want people to remember Dr. Crow, because we're going to talk about a connection to him later. But remember the spelling that I said, C-R-O-W-E, because we're going to jump into stuff a little bit later there. But I do want to go into Connecticut next, because that's when it really gets weird, is Connecticut, because then they kind of build on what's happened in Michigan and Ohio, but then they take it to another level. There's a whole different lore there. Even though it's very similar, it's also pretty crazy too.
No, I totally agree. And I think with the Crow, the first Dr. Crow, I will say with those two stories, in my opinion, there's two different ways. I won't go totally, because I think it's more going to be for our breakdown, but I just think there's more than likely a little bit of truth in both. I do think there's another thing, but I just don't want to give it away now, because like we will like get our like conclusions. But I do think there's a little bit of truth in both.
No, I don't disagree with that. And again, I've got a crazy theory that's going to take it out of the scope of it even being children at all. And I think maybe the children were a cover story for what was really going on in these woods. And especially if people were to walk up and see these things, maybe that's the cover story. Oh, these kids, they have this disease, I'm helping them out. But that's not what at all they are. And there's something completely different. And it kind of makes sense when you're talking about cannibalism and eating babies, and plays into a lot of the occult. In my opinion, it plays more into the occult aspect of what you hear about in these elite circles, and really just magic with a CK in general throughout history. But we'll definitely get to that. That's coming up. But I do want to get to Connecticut. And there's a ton of locations in Connecticut. It's not limited to one particular place. You've got Southwest Connecticut. You've got Litchfield County, Fairfield County. You got New Haven County. And then in those places, you got communities, Newtown, New Milford, Trumbull, Shelton, Stratford, Monroe, Easton, Weston. You've got a lot, man. Seaford, Oxford, Milford, Southbury. So this is happening everywhere in Connecticut, which I thought that was crazy, because you got Michigan and Ohio where it's just in these one particular place, and in Connecticut, it's just like all over, melon heads going nuts. And I wonder if that's because, if you think about it, especially, you know, early in the U.S., everything started on the East Coast. So if you've got, you know, the 13 colonies and everything else that's spawning down, and I know melon heads didn't really show up till the early 1900s, but I'm thinking that a lot of your big cities and everything started on the East Coast. So if that's where you've got, you know, your original hospitals, your original scientists, why wouldn't something spill out from on that side first before you got to the Mideast?
And you have your original scientists, your original doctors, and your original alchemists.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, and people that were the witches, the people of those times. I mean, it's not exactly in that area, but Salem Witch Trials is somewhere around there in the East Coast, and that is where you're going to inhabit it. And I think some of it, when we go like more west, when we see stuff like what you guys saw around the ranch area, you know, in the Shape of Shadows documentary you guys did, that's because of the natives, you know, the Indians that lived around those areas. I think that's why we see a little bit more of that activity. But you're right. Absolutely. I think we see more in the East Coast because witches and alchemists, yeah, doctors too. But the doctors is what? The same science? You know, it could be the same thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because, you know, alchemists in the past were considered the doctors. They were the ones that gave medical information. So this is nothing new. And a lot of alchemy is not considered magical now. It's just considered science.
It was the Salem Witch Trials was Connecticut. Oh, I guess I was right.
Massachusetts.
Or partial. Like, I'm just looking it
Salem,
up right
Massachusetts,
now.
Right?
Yeah. Well, thanks for bursting my bubble.
It's in the same region, so you're not wrong there. Yeah, no. It's in that same like New England region for sure. But yeah, so in Connecticut, you've got these two variations. According to one variation of the myth of these melon heads, Fairfield County was a location of, guess what? An asylum for the criminally insane that burned down in the fall of 1960. Now, this actually resulted in the death of all the staff and most of the patients, with 10 to 20 inmates accounted for supposedly having survived and escaped the woods. So they're saying that they had hydrocephalus. This is back to that. And they ran off in the woods and they resorted to cannibalism to survive the harsh winters. And they resulted in inbreeding and all this stuff between themselves, because they just, it was just that group. So their kids are having sex with their kids. And before you know it, it becomes like a whole inbreeding thing, probably something like, you know, deep in West Virginia. But immediately, as I'm getting to the third asylum, basically the third asylum or prison, that's when I triggered the whole MK Ultra type facilities for children that we hear about, or what happens to some prison inmates at some of these really rough places that are off the grid, where they're just doing testing on people that are prisoners. So it made me think of that, because why are they just so ready to get out? It's not just because they're crazy. Well, they're doing a lot of experimentation on these people too. So it ends up making them probably go crazier. And who knows what kind of experimentation they were doing on them, Sean. It could have given them some sort of superhuman abilities or something else, and it went out of control, and then they were able to take over and run off. So that's one of the first variations of the melon heads in Connecticut.
And, you know, like you said, multiple experiments could have been going at these facilities at one time too, with the melon heads, with other people as well, because they're trying, you know, different drugs. Just some people like to mess. Hey, scientists in general, if you even take alchemy out of it, which are the original scientists basically, but still, they like to meddle with things, whether it's supposed to or not. Like, you know, we had an episode on Shadowban Syndicates where we're talking about Crimeas, you know what I mean? Crimeas. Not, I was saying it wrong on the episode. I forgot what I was saying, but I'm not going to say it again because I'll lose it.
Chimeras.
But these, yeah, chimeras. The mixed with humanoids and experiments that happen, we see all this stuff. And then also something's happening as well with these melon heads. So like it could be multiple things at one time, was what I'm saying.
No, I don't disagree. And here in Connecticut, we're going to get to that part too. So the second variation, This is when it starts getting a little weird. So the melon heads were said to be descendants of a colonial era family. So You were just talking about Salem witch trials from Shelton Tumble, who were banished after accusations of witchcraft were made against them, and it caused them to retreat in the woods. So this inbreeding caused them to start having these melon head traits from the actual inbreeding. And these melon heads preyed upon humans who wandered too far in their territories. But not only that, they had magical powers as well, because they were said to be witches. So they're also using whatever, you know, powers that they may have, or they've, you know, you know, working with some entities off in these woods with this inbreeding. So this is what this particular variation is, was an actual family who ran from being accused of witchcraft. So they were, you know, they were burning people at the stake for that, you know, Salem witch trials and all that. So my question is too, was this around the time, did this family know of, or were they somehow connected to maybe some sort of elite inbreeding or knew about it and they took, went on the run and then just got basically, you know, hemmed up in the woods and then they just created this whole inbreeding cycle of melon heads, you know, who knows what they're an offshoot off.
Kind of like the movie The Village. Remember the movie The Village? They just all lived in that place. They didn't even know anything else existed. And they scared. I mean, it's a different scenario, but I mean, that could possibly happen though, man. If you, once you get into an area and you have kids and you're like, yeah, you can't pass that wall.
Side note, that is my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie of all time. That beats Sixth Sense and everything else for me. And nobody would ever say that because I love Sixth Sense, but I absolutely love The Village. I think it's the concept because I feel like they've probably done stuff like that in certain places that, you know, fly zones and different, you know, areas like that. It just makes me think that they've probably done some sort of test like this. Hey, what if we just go to this area that nobody can get into and raise families? And if we teach them this is all there is, and make them stay within these parameters out of fear of some supernatural beings in the woods, this is what you can create. And they did it to, quote unquote, for the good of humanity because of the bad things that had happened to each of their families, them losing family members. I encourage anybody to go watch The Village if you haven't seen
it. Great movie.
It's an actual phenomenal movie. Just the whole movie's good. It, not just the twist, but everything.
I have to fight you a little bit on the Sixth Sense thing, man. I love Sixth, but I was a big Sixth, but I love The Village too. I would say neck and neck. I don't really hate too much on that because I thought the concept is great because it has so many different levels to it because it kind of teaches about propaganda as well. And you could see like how easily it is to manipulate people because all these people live their whole life like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I liked a lot of M. Night Shyamalan's like early movies. They were good. But that was just phenomenal, bro. Like that movie right there. And I remember when it came out, like people thought it was okay. It got way more of a cult following as it went. And then like years later, people were like, man, how did I miss this?
I loved it. I saw in the theater, man.
I put people on it years later and they were like, man, how did I miss this? So I was like, it flew under the radar. It wasn't that type of movie that everybody just hit them a certain way. Like Sixth Sense hit everybody. But this was one of those ones where you were like, especially with how we think, with like how the government can control you. This was one of those movies, man, where I'm like, man, what a way to pull it off.
And even if you don't like government, you know, stuff or anything of that level, it's just a great movie on the, because how we probably killed it for you because we gave you some spoilers, but hey, it's still good.
I don't think we gave you the actual twist.
When I watched it, I had no idea, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, well, yeah, they don't know the actual twist, but yeah, that's what was crazy though. Cause when you watch it, it really throws you through a loop.
And it's just so,
the first time you watch it.
And actresses are top notch, man. Like Joaquin Phoenix is good in anything he's in. So it was good, like across the board. Again, I encourage you, if you hadn't seen The Village, go see it. It's an old movie, but man, it's a good one. But yeah, so in this version of the melon heads, they would bite or consume whoever enters their territory. So again, we're back to this human feeding. Just this weird obsession with human blood, human meat. So all these melon heads have this taste for it, which makes me think too, when these tests were done on them, were their tests done to help create that in them too? Were these people that were testing them feeding them human meat to get them the taste of it? If you're training somebody to do something or you're MK Ultraing them, you can teach them to do whatever you want. So that to me is very telling. I don't think they were just running off in the woods and being like, well, we're going to eat this now because there's animals in the woods too. You don't have to eat human meat.
And even if they didn't give them humans, I just thought of this right now. You can trick somebody like to be thinking they're eating human. The whole, it could be cow right? But you give them cow skin, but the whole time when you're not seeing it and you're feeling the texture, it's like when you're walking through a haunted house and they're like, oh, eyeballs, it's grapes, or you know what I mean? But at the time, when you, you don't know the difference. And I think there's a lot of sick people, not saying that they couldn't like feed them actual humans. I just think it's probably harder to get a vast amount of humans to constantly feed them, but you could tell them that's what it is. And they're going to go for that. Oh, we eat humans, especially if you don't know anything else.
No, for sure, man. And also in Connecticut, there's a lot of other legends of deformed or mutated humans that are found in various locations near Fairfield or New Haven County. And sometimes they overlap. So these stories overlap and you don't know what's the melon heads, what's not the melon heads. And I think some of these names, too, that I'm about to bring up, these other cryptids are actually a version of the melon heads too. So I just think that depending on what location they were in, maybe somebody named them something different. But you got these people called the Danbury Frog People, and they were described as pressing a large lemon-shaped head with eyeballs on the sides. So like if you took a lemon and you had eyeballs pressed on the sides, and they had thin, crusty lips and wide mouths, sunken noses and slit nostrils, which a lot of the melon heads were also said to have too, the slit nostrils. And again, abnormally large heads, their bodies are thin and gangly. So this is very similar to the melon heads, just in a very, just a little bit different look depending on this weird area that they were in. But the main stories come out of this guy, Brian Hines, who had some accounts that he was able to tell people about, and I'll read a couple of his accounts, which I think are pretty interesting. So before his junior year of high school, his mother was running a Meals on Wheels at a local church, and he volunteered to help, and him and his friends would go around door to door and give out lunches to unfortunates. One of the houses that he went to were frog people, and they shared a name he couldn't remember, but they wouldn't come to the door, and they were told to knock on the door and then leave the food there. But the kids would hide and wait, and they would see the door crack open and a hand would come out, like a weird hand, and snatch the food and pull it in. So these people would never leave the house, but the people in the area knew them and called them the frog people. So they knew that they were melon heads that lived at this house, which is super weird that there was actually a family living in a house that they brought meals to. I don't know, man. It's a wild story. And this, and this guy's got...
Kind of reminds me of the Burbs. The Burbs, man. Another good... Right? You're the guy that, oh man, something weird over there. Ah, oh, it's probably not. I'm just saying, man, you never know, man. They, soft disclosure, like one of those clones, one of those J clones would say.
And two, speaking of that movie, though, the ultimate bloodsucker, Tom Hanks, was a star in that one. So,
yeah, man, the guy that's fucking taking pictures of shoes on Instagram of like, yeah, this person's dead. Look at the one shoe.
Yeah, man, that dude is something else, man. Great, great actor.
My brother gets mad though, man. He loves Tom Hanks, and like I'll be like, well, you know, I'll be like, you know, he eats babies, or I'll say stuff like that, and he'll be like, you shut the fuck up, man. He's a national treasure.
And that's the thing. You can enjoy somebody's like art and still know that, man, that dude is awful. Like, you know that. I mean, dude, he's been accused of so much pedophilia overseas and gotten out of it. I mean, this is known. This is a known fact. This is just something people made up to drag his name through the dirt.
He became a, yeah, he became a citizen of Greece for a reason.
Yes, bro. Yeah, he did. And you see that happen with a lot of famous people, man. They'll dip off to another country when they're having issues. So this guy, Brian Hines, has another story that I thought was really interesting, too. This is a year later. He's at a local grocery store around 11 o'clock p.m. with the same friends he was with when they dropped the food off. And they were walking down a canned goods aisle, and he saw a frog person in person, and said the frog person was wearing penny loafers, short sleeve dress shirt tucked into khaki pants. They said he's going through soups, and said they gasped. He turned and saw them, and they said it was not as horrific as described as the people were telling him. Now, they said his head was lemon shaped, he had a lazy eye, his face was stretched out, and his eyes and nose looked far apart, and he had sores on his thin lips, but he did have that frog appearance. But they said he was nice, but they parted out of the way and got away. And that was his run-in with them. But they said if you looked at them from behind, they definitely looked like frogs for sure. So in that aspect, it could be just a weird family with a weird genetic disorder that lived in that house that didn't really want to go out in public a lot. But it could be maybe they were also a derivative off of these melon heads that lived in the woods. And maybe this is a family that just learned how to integrate into society. Like a couple melon head kids, man, a boy and a girl. They were like, we're going to leave this place. We're going to get out of here. It's our chance.
I hate living here. We could do it on our own.
And they did.
Just me and you, baby.
And they made a life for themselves, these melon heads. And then they changed their names. They're like, we ain't no melon heads anymore, man. We're the Danbury frog people. Like, that's what we are, man. That's a better name. They probably had like pet frogs as kids too out in the woods. So they were like, we're going to be like the frogs. We're going to.
Yeah. Look how my eyes are all weird like that frog, man. Because I just imagine like that giant. Just you've seen enough cartoons where it's like that one regular and then that like enormously ridiculous, like large eye. We're like, whoa,
well, the good
bro.
Thing about the Danbury frog people, man, they didn't know anything about Alex Jones at the time, man, or they wouldn't have had kids.
Because yeah, they're turning the freaking frogs gay. But they do sound, and they could be an offspring, like you said. Like, no pun intended. Like, but you're going to change and alter a little bit, right? You're not going to exactly, especially with the experiments and whatever was put in these bodies. And I'm with you that I don't necessarily think they are what everybody else
thinks.
Yeah,
no, for sure. And I think there's some sort of derivative that they spawned from. And I know we're building everybody up for that, but it's going to be worth it. I promise, guys, when we get to that part of it. But there's also two other cryptids that are in that area of Connecticut, but they're also connected to these melon heads. You got the faceless people of Monroe. And the tale is that these faceless people, they're a family of mutant humanoids that live in a ramshackled farmhouse in rural Monroe, Connecticut. They are rumored to live alongside an old man who serves as the caretaker. And he's often seen working in the yard and chasing cars away. And they're said to have no eyes, nose, ears, just a mouth outlined with pale lips, bony hands grasping around constantly as if trying to find their way in the world. But they're also said to have big heads, stretched membranes where the eyes should be, bumps for noses, holes for ears. And they're saying at nighttime, he will come outside and basically let them out. And they all like run around in the woods and do stuff. They're not really known to kill anybody or anything like that. They just kind of stay to themselves. And the caretaker basically runs people off. So he's, I don't know his lot in this. I don't know what his whole deal is in this. Is this somebody that they came to and like, listen, we've got money. Like, we want to pay you because we're weird. We're some weird version of person. Maybe something that was tested on during those times at these asylums. And maybe they're an offshoot from these melon heads too. And then they got some sort of caretaker, very similar to the frog people, where they were like, hey, we're going to integrate within society and make it work. We're just trying to live our life, man. We're trying to build a life for our families.
We're normal. No, I definitely see a lot of that. I didn't go too much into Connecticut. I kind of stayed in like more local Michigan. But what you're saying, again, it's so similar, man. So, like, I think there's a lot of these, not just facilities, but there's different ways you approach it, right? People have the same ideas, but they do it a different way. That's why, like, earlier I was talking about, like, Dr. Crow. Well, there's a good one and a bad one, right? Well, there probably is multiple, and that's probably just a generic name that's used, in my opinion. And the reason why is because one's going to go, hey, they could even know each other. It could be the same dude. But the thing you're going to do is like, hey, let's have 10 of these creatures and 10 of these creatures or whatever. I'm going to do the same experiment, but be nice to them. And I'm going to do a different experiment with them and be mean to them. It kind of reminds me of people that were doing that replica app, the AI app, that some people were like trying to make it like, oh man, I want it to be a lover or a companion or a friend. And other people were like, man, I cuss at it every day and were like, try to make it. And then it became such an evil thing. And I think that is part of the lure and also what makes it closer to reality to me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we're going to round it out with Mongoloid Village. If anybody knows what a mongoloid is, that is a
mongoloid Mike.
Yeah, the mongoloid word is not supposed to be used. It's not PC, guys, like to use that. But this is an actual place called Mongoloid Village, and it is in North Branford, Connecticut. And it said it's a small gated community, and it is the home of a freaky short, recessed four-headed mongoloids. So they're big heads, very similar to the melon heads. The gates post signs from the U.S. government that say no trespassing. And the community is made up of little cottages that look normal from a distance, but they're actually miniature in size. So it's kind of like made to be, you know, for the mongoloid people to feel like they're in a normal house. They say there's one big house where there's doctors, nurses, and groundskeepers that live there. If you trespass, you will be arrested or shot or taken in and never seen again. So it goes back to like the eating of people. If you go in there, man, you ain't coming out. I can tell you that right now. You're done if you go on Mongoloid Village, man.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good on Mongoloid Village.
And the mongoloid, when I hear that word, it reminds me of that hunchback from 300. Like when I see that, that's automatically what I assume it looks like.
No, for sure. And to kind of wrap up Connecticut, Dracula Drive. So there's a number of Connecticut-based legends of the Melonheads, and they all have the same characteristic in common. It's the inclusion of a secluded, rustic, or single lane, usually dirt road, running through the Melonheads' wooded territory, and they're all referred to as Dracula Drive, which I thought was crazy because Dracula, vampires, drinking blood, and it seems like
adrenochrome.
And listen, there's no road that's actually called Dracula Drive. It's just in name. So if there's a road that goes through one of these Melonhead territories, people call it Dracula Drive. Don't go down Dracula Drive. It could be called like Woodland Road, but it's literally, they'll call it Dracula Drive if it's a Melonhead area. So that's one of the common themes that goes on in Connecticut is the name of the road. So I think at this point we can start shifting into, you know, what these melon heads could actually be. Now, I know you and I have, you know, knocked around the fact that, you know, they could be these kids that have this disease and they could be experimented on, which I don't throw that out of the realm of possibility at all. We know that people get experimented on this day. We know that people are captured. We know how many children go missing a year. I don't think people really know the number of how many kids go missing a year globally. It's 8 million.
Was it 800,000?
8 million.
Oh, 8 million?
Globally. Globally. Is 8, yes.
Oh, globally. I was thinking 800. It's 800,000 in
it's
America,
it's something
right?
close to that. It's in the 100,000s in the U.S. But globally, it's 8 million children go missing a year. So now, that's not to say that some of those children don't come back from being missing, but this is all the ones that are reported every year is 8 million. But you got to think.
But there's also a lot that are never, ever heard of again. Some come up missing and some unfortunately are found, but not, you know, alive anymore. But then there's some that are never, ever, ever found. And then there's multitudes of things. I mean, there was just recently, I think it was in Kentucky, the cops released some lady. Like, I think she was in her mid-20s or something like that. And she was chained to a basement floor from her neck. So there's all kinds of people that would do these things. And it's not just pedophiles. It's also people that want to experiment on stuff. And maybe they don't see it as being
bad. Well, think about this, though, Sean. The movie Hostel. Like, that's a real thing. Like, they didn't just get that idea in Hollywood from nowhere. This is a real thing. Like, and we know that after World War II, Operation Paperclip, when a lot of these Nazi generals and high-ranking officers got out of Germany and went to these other countries, it was even said that they would have these quote unquote hunting parties where they would send humans and, you know, children alike into the woods and they would hunt them down like they would do fox hunting on horseback, go hunting for them through the woods. So we know that killing humans for sport is something that's been done for a long time. You could even look at in battle when people would capture a certain village or capture a certain area, they'll take in those humans and they'll do whatever they want to them. Sometimes they would use them as like hunting practice where they would send them off into these areas and hunt them down as practice. People forget about that in war, man. You can do anything you want during war. Those people become slaves.
Yeah, there's no rules
after that. They become slaves at that point and you can do whatever you want to with them.
And a low budget film, more not low budget, but it was not out there as much. I'm sure you've heard of it. Surviving Game with Ice-T and Gary Busey, where he's being, you know, he's invited to the cabin. Hey man, she's chilling with the guy, and then he realized he's being hunted after, you know, that they do that for a reason, man. And I'm sure that some of these elitists, not even some, probably quite a few of them, they're not just hunting elephants, man. They're not just hunting tiger. Like, once you've hunted everything that's crazy, what else are you going to want to hunt? You're going to want to hunt your own kind, like, because they're up to these levels. Just like on the surface level, when we've talked about Dracula before, I think we were talking about it with Thomas from Paranoid American. We were talking about how at the time there was also like very prominent people in Queens. Like there was this queen in particular that was like, I've been lesbian. I slept with dudes, animals. I've done it all, you know, at the same time. The next level was I'm going to start drinking blood. And that's where some of the lure from Dracula comes from. And that's what happens with these elites. They have so much. They're like, you know what, man? I don't know what else to do, man. They're not going to just go out the bar and drink it. Most of us are at work all day and then we're tired. So we're like, maybe I'll have a beer or two, but then I'm going to go to sleep. Imagine they have the whole day to whatever they want. Hell yeah, they're hunting humans.
Yeah, and it's a whole different scope of reality for those people. And I've said it before on this show. I actually feel bad for a lot of those people. And the reason why is they had to learn it from their family members who brought them into it as children. So when you think about children getting kidnapped, they're in the exact same boat. They were branded from being a child. They were never allowed to be children themselves. They were taught that this is the way, like we drink blood, we eat babies. Like imagine that. Imagine being a kid and that's all you know. You wouldn't think anything's wrong with it. Imagine being taught that this is right and the only reason people think it's wrong is because society, check it out now, society has taught us that there's limitations on who we should be. But this is why we do what we do, because we're above that. We are in a spiritual sphere that they'll never understand. When you're taught that way, then it makes more sense. Then I have way more empathy for these people. I'm not saying that you can't get out of it or you can't, you know, your brain can't break the matrix that they've laid out for you, but it's a lot harder than you think.
And you're also not saying they can't be held accountable for like the damage they have done, but they still deserve redemption. I mean, especially I could have, when you say it like that, I do have some empathy for them because again, you don't know anything else. Now, you're going to still be held accountable, but you still deserve redemption. I mean, we all do, but I'm just saying, especially on that circumstances, you don't know what's right and wrong. What's wrong is right to you. It's all backwards. And to get back to like what we're discussing about the melon heads, I also think it's similar to like what we say about Bigfoot. I think there's multitudes of different things, you know? And when one person labels it as melon head, so different disproportionate heads are going to be labeled as melon head. So there may be an aspect of it where it is with the disease and maybe they weren't experimented on, but they got escaped and they lived in the woods. But then there's the other parts where I'm more leaning towards this alchemical and like something created, right? I think they were trying to create something, in my opinion. Now, not necessarily. And if Juan was here,
shout out.
You know what I mean? He would say it's a homunculus, right? And a homunculus can really be anything from what talking more and learning more when we talk to Juan about it. And I'm thinking, were they really trying to create what we know now and see as a bodysuit of a gray? Like, trying to mold it, because you know how they had the melonish heads? I mean, at least for what we see drawing wise and pictures. I mean, I haven't personally seen a gray in person, but from what we see on television and all that, they have those shapes. And I'm also like leaning towards, were they trying to experiment it with some kind of like telepathy, or, you know what I mean? As well as I could, and they may have already been gifted children. We don't know.
So, you really want me to go there as soon as you said gray aliens. So yes, I definitely go in there with gray aliens, but we're going to bring up Dr. Crow from earlier. And I have found a tie to a Mr. Aleister Crowley, who was also living in the United States around the same time, from what I can tell. So we don't know when this Dr. Crow was really around, but I'm looking at the stories of the Melonheads and where they kind of originated from that early 1900s. It's where they started, early 1900s, into later on. Aleister Crowley was in the States in the early 1900s. Around 1918, as a matter of fact, he was in the States for about 4 or 5 years in New York, but he's also doing a lot of traveling, not just in New York. He didn't just stay in New York. He was traveling all over the place. And this is where he was doing various magical experiments in a place on West 9th. And he was doing what's called the Alamantra working. So the process of the Alamantra working is a deliberate channel into ephemeral cosmic influences so that extra dimensional entities, or what we consider gray aliens, could enter our universe. So he was opening portals on West 9th to connect with these gray aliens. As a matter of fact, he did connect with a gray alien called Lam. And if anyone has seen Lam, this is the classic picture that Aleister Crowley drew of a gray alien, the first depicted drawing of a gray alien, which was L-A-M, Lam, he met through this Alamantra working process. So he draws this portrait of Lam after making contact with the entity. So the entity, this is after he's written the Book of the Law, and the entity Iowas automatically wrote through him to write this book, the Book of the Law. Lam was the follow-up, and this was this entity. And matter of fact, Lam in Tibetan stands for way or path. So it is the way or the path, and it is the gateway or a link between the star systems of Sirius and Andromeda. So Lam came to fulfill the work that was initiated by Iowas. So Aleister Crowley, or Crowley, but Crowley, Dr. Crow. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's kind of odd that this is the same time period that all of a sudden these gray entities, these melon heads, are snatching people up. What do gray aliens do? They kidnap people and you never hear from them again. So are they eating them, or are they taking them to fallen angels to create Nephilim? Is that what's going on? Because we know that Aleister Crowley was deep embedded with these entities and these fallen angels. And we know early 1900s, when the Melonheads first showed up, Crowley was all over the U.S. Like, he was running from overseas because he had some beef with some guys overseas. So he came over here, and this is when he met Tesla. This is when all that stuff went down with Tesla at the Tesla Tower, when portals were being opened up there. I mean, bro, I'm telling you right now, he was opening portals and he was bringing these gray entities in here. And we know this for a fact. We know this from himself. He drew the first actual drawing of gray aliens. And Kenneth Grant, who was his protege, he was a ceremonial magician, and he actually made his own offshoot of the Thelemic religion, which Aleister Crowley helped create. and he started the Typhonian Ordo Templi Orientis, named the Typhonian Order, with his wife, Steffi Grant. And he was so deep with that drawing, he coveted the drawing to the point that he like was trying to make a pact with Aleister Crowley to get the drawing. And Crowley made him describe what it was. He said, "You guess what it is, and I'll tell you." And so Grant, to this day, we don't know exactly what he told Crowley, and Crowley or Grant gave him a guess, and Crowley basically was like, "Yeah," he's like, "your outlook on life and basically what you're saying this is," he's like, "you might as well go off into a pipe dream." So Crowley basically told him, like, "you don't even understand what this entity, the magnitude of what these entities are, what Lamb is, these gray aliens." So in my opinion, this is what I think could be happening. I think there could have been some sort of kid testing or testing on humans, but not in the way that they said happened. These might have been gray aliens that Aleister Crowley himself, Dr. Crow, who we don't know anything about him showing up, and we don't know anything about him leaving outside of hearing that these melon heads killed him off in the woods, but there was no body found, no nothing. So it made me think when I started thinking about gray aliens, because the first thing I think of with melon heads is gray aliens. That just makes sense. They're little, big heads, big eyes. They just remind me of gray aliens. And when I tied that into Lamb, and I was looking at some of the pictures of that, and then I ran across Dr. Crow, and I was like, Crowley, wait a minute. Let me see if they were in the same vicinity. And they were! Crowley was in the States during the same time, man. This is crazy. Well,
I love that. I think that's dope. And I agree, but I think it a little bit different. So I think, well, obviously, when he came in Connecticut, that's kind of a border. That's obviously, I think he was in Connecticut. I think that's why there's so much of this lure in Connecticut, because you come through the borders somewhere on that line, right? I don't know exactly at that time when he came over, like you said, and that you would have to become through immigration somewhere around there. Now, I think that, and I'm starting to think, now I'm not saying the Fallen is not, I'm with you. I think the Fallen is kind of like in this involved as well as like teaching. The more you talk about that, I really do kind of believe that. Like, they're teaching ways of using this magic with the K, right? And I think Aleister Crowley was harnessing this. And I think that these grays or melon heads, what you call, are homunculus type creatures. And I think Aleister Crowley was doing that. And I think that when you see that the Midwest, it's copycats. It's copycat people that are following Crowley's way, that are like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is, and that's why we see these. So maybe he's making the grays, and that's why they're all messed up.
I don't doubt it.
You're not doing it right. You're not getting it wrong.
And what if Crowley went to these places in like the Mideast, Midwest, and taught someone how to do this and left? So this is the lore of the Dr. Crow that showed up for a while and left, but you don't know who else took on board, because he had apprentices everywhere. This is a known fact. So he could have come through, and this even ties into Nephilim portal babies. You've got these gray meat sacks that are created to harness these Nephilim entities who are dragging people off in the woods. People are thinking they're being eaten by these children, but no, actually they're being drawn out to create something in another dimension, because we clearly know from Crowley how Lamb got here was through a portal. This was through a Stargate portaling system that he was opening up with all of these rituals. So, man, I'm telling you right now, I can't believe I found that connection. And it hit me. I was like, wait a minute, when was he in the States? Let me look at the time frame. I was like, oh my God, he was there. He was in the States when this was happening.
Yeah. That, you nailed it on that one, man. And now that you're saying that, that makes even more sense, right? He's going to want to create this army for these entities that are not just controlling him, but he looks up to him, wants to. They're probably lying to him and being like, yeah, well, you're going to be on the team, bro. You know what I'm saying? Don't worry, man. We're going to get you on the team. So he's out there. Can he travel with portal? Who's saying that he has to drive anywhere or horseback anywhere or anything? Because you got to remember, because didn't Crowley die like in 47, 48, somewhere around
there?
Yeah,
I believe it was the 40s.
Like, there was cars, bro.
Yeah.
When he was alive, there was he went from horses to cars. But I think there's a lot of that portal aspect of it. And then you got to think that there's some proof to it, if you ask me, because they talk about Stalin. When they talk about Area 51, they say Stalin created a fake UFO and surgically altered humans. Now, we're thinking like how, oh, you got to cut his face off. You know what I mean? We didn't see these people. Now, again, when you're doing an experiment, it doesn't come out right the first few times. So maybe they were making them, or Crowley was expert, or some of his understudies, and he was traveling, like you're saying, that they weren't copying him. He was trying to teach as many as he could his skills and what he came up with, or what he was taught from the fallen and spreading it around. And I think that some people are just not good at alchemy. I think that's why we see some of this. And I'm not saying it is the whole end all on Melonheads. But once you said Crowley, I was like, oh my God, man, there is endless options now, bro. You literally have it. If Crowley, what would you do? Of course, you don't want everybody to know it's Crowley. You just have to take off the last. And he's an alchemist, so he could call himself a doctor.
And listen, Crowley's whole goal was to transcend. And you were talking about his death, and we knew it was in the 40s. I need to look it up for sure. Bro, you can't make this up. 1947, man. Roswell, Operation High Jump. All this stuff's happening the year that Crowley dies. And what shows up the year that Crowley dies? The Greys on a wide scale. Now they're known to the world. So maybe these melon heads in the early 1900s leading up to this point, they are the same thing. They're the Greys, and they're pulling people back into the woods, into these portals, into this other dimension with these alchemists that Dr. Crow or Aleister Crowley has taught. Bro, I think we're onto something here.
Let me add one more layer now, right? The Greys are the final product. So the melon heads that we hear about, these are the ones that were tossed aside, scrapped. Maybe things were burnt, or where they killed the doctor, whatever. That's why some of the stories line up. But the final outcome, oh my God, 1947. Wow, that is crazy, man. Operation High Jump, Crowley, and then Roswell. Like, that's not a coincidence. It happens after he's perfected it, right? Or maybe he's going around trying to perfect it. It just makes sense that there'd be all these weird... You can't always get it right the first time. I'm sure that you're not the fallen. You're not God. You don't have... You know what I'm saying? You're like, oh, let me mix a little bit of dog dick with some ox butthole. Oh, that's a little too much ox butthole there, man.
Oh, my God, man.
That is... I love it, man. I love it. I think that is true. And regardless, if it's just... I just think that there's got to be ones that are not Greys, because they were trying to make them that, and they just look all deformed, and they had to maybe use it off a human, and then they finally perfected it, and then wink, wink, Crowley's gone. All of a sudden, when all this when everything's happening, oh, he's happened to just die that same year.
Exactly. And to add another layer to it that I was saving too. So I told everyone to remember Holland, Michigan. So this is the Dor E. Felt Mansion was in Holland, Michigan. So at that point, I was like, okay, so what is close by to Holland, Michigan? The Michigan Stonehenge is close to Holland, Michigan, the Michigan Triangle on the Michigan Lake. So check this out. Holland, Michigan has got a lake river system that starts at Beechwood and goes to another little bit bigger lake system, but it dumps into the Michigan Lake. The Michigan Lake, the Bermuda Triangle of Michigan, or the Michigan Triangle, its tip is right there. You've got this ancient stone arrangement called the Michigan Stonehenge in the water. And they said that this Michigan Stonehenge is access to a portaling system. So you've got a giant underwater portaling system right there in the same area that this doctor, the unknown name doctor, though, here in Michigan, they call him Dr. Crow in Ohio, which isn't that far away from there, going on in this Michigan Triangle, where it's said to be a portaling system underneath the water. Not only that, next to the Stonehenge is a giant boulder with a hieroglyph of a woolly mammal on it. What did Admiral Byrd see when he supposedly went inside the Earth? Which I think maybe he went through a portaling system. Woolly mammoths. This is right next to it. Booyah, dog.
Bang, we're in the danger zone. Man, and I'm clenching my cheeks hard, dude.
Wow, I love it. No, that makes even more sense now because you came through immigration probably around Connecticut. That's why Connecticut's so crazy. Then you, if you're going to where a portal is at, right? What the? Why is there not in Pennsylvania? Don't really hear a lot about, right? Pennsylvania's in that little area. You would think that, oh, migrates through, but not if you're portaling.
Exactly. And we know just from the fact that Aleister Crowley, during that period of time, was talking to Tesla, at least via a mutual friend. But I think they met in person. I think they met Tesla Tower. And I think the whole purpose to meet at Tesla Tower was to work out some of this alchemical portaling. I think that Crowley had some info that Tesla needed and Tesla had some info that Crowley needed. And this was to get portaling on a wider scale. This is more of that Nephilim or Raphaim portaling from back in the day where they knew sigils like the back of their hand. So they're just like, doo, doo, doo. It's like pressing a couple buttons. They're opening them up, moving around where they're working a lot harder to be able to do this. So I think all these places are connected. I think that Crowley was the one involved with these melon heads. And I don't think it's a reach to say that because of the time period that he was in the States. And then this Dr. Crow, this mysterious Dr. Crow that no one's seen, but the name sounds eerily similar, especially when it's that C-R-O-W-E, which is one of the spellings that people keep saying that it's spelled like. When I saw that spelling, it just made me think. I was like, man, I was already digging into Crowley anyway with Lamb and the Greys. I was like, let me see time periods. It works. It works.
Well, even with the melon heads, they go back far, man. It's far enough. Pat, before 1947, you know what I mean? So that's the only thing that had to fit into that timeline. But I did find out something unfortunate right now. I think I will be the new PSYOP of the show. You know how the Chinese, I've been watching a lot of Gary's a Number Guy, right? Well, the Chinese zodiac sign for 1947 is the pig. And 1983, the year I was born. So great. I'm an alchemist.
You're one of those unfortunate elite kids that got born into it. Can't help it. I've got empathy for Sean, guys. He's a bad person. He's got redemption, though. He can Thank be God redeemed.
Wow, though, that's mind-blowing, though, man. The portal system's right there. You got the connection with Tesla. We know that he's... Everybody just thinks of the free energy part. They hide, oh, man, free one. What do you want free energy for, man? You need a lot of energy to open a portal. You know what I mean? But then again, because when he's trying to do it before Crowley, that's why I'm with you. They had to have met. And then he's like, oh, this is how you do it. You know what I'm saying? And I think he wants to implement it. He wanted to implement it almost like scientifically, like take part the alchemist part, like what we know as science, not like as far as magic.
Think about
science.
It this way. So I think when he opens up this portaling or Stargate using these rituals, when he meets Lamb, I don't think Lamb was a meat sack. I think it was a fallen angel masquerading because I think they do masquerade as Greys too, right? I think that they can shapeshift into whatever.
I thought you said gays at first. I was like, whoa,
hey man,
bro.
It's those frog people, man. They got me. It's on my mind. I think that it was to show him what these entities needed to be. Like, this is the ultimate form. And then he needed to create these meat sacks for these Nephilim who didn't have bodies anymore, the lost souls of the Nephilim, to have these meat sacks to inhabit to then help carry on the goal too. So I think by the time 1947 hits, those Greys were meat sacks inhabited by these entities, which also tricked the governments into thinking they were aliens, that they were these extraterrestrials that they said that they were. And this just enacted that fallen angel plan, escalated it really quickly. But I think that Crowley has had a huge hand behind the scenes of helping implement this entire process. Dude, it makes no sense that he dies the year that the huge spike happens with UFOs, with all of it. I mean, it literally escalates, like technology blows up after he dies. It's like that was the final sacrifice. It's like his death was the ultimate transcendence. It's like what he was promised. If when he died, like this is what happens.
I don't want to get all Duncan Trussell on you, but wow. Like seriously though, it's like, it's odd. Like now, like it seems obvious now, right? Like before I didn't think, but when I started thinking Grays a little bit is when you started talking about the like faceless people and shit like that. It kind of reminded me of what we're hearing about in Peru, but now that's a great, I love it, man, because that has to be like, to me, that works logically. It goes into a place where you're like, hey, he was here. The timeline was here. And guess what? There was no all these sightings of aliens, and then all of a sudden there is.
Think about what happened.
And I think they keep changing
them. Think about what happened in Las Vegas when they saw those tall that looked similar to Grays, but they looked scared. Well, maybe that's something similar to what these frog people were and these faceless people were. Some of these ones that got away, they were hybrids that were being built behind the scenes. They didn't like it. They weren't meat sacks. They were just like hybrids that the experiments were going bad. They ran away. They were like the mess ups. I think a lot of that was going on too, man. Alchemists don't get it right the first time. I can tell you that. Like they're not perfect. And especially even if they're being taught by fallen entities, it doesn't mean they're going to get it right. Like off the first time, like fallen entities, if,
or even understand mean, what they really exactly. mean. Like, you know what
so
I mean?
So even if you had Aleister Crowley go there and teach so-and-so and left, so-and-so still got to screw up a bunch of times before they're getting it right. And if you're also creating meat sacks, you're probably not going to get those right off the first try either, not the first batch. So even if these entities take over a batch that's messed up, could be some of the original melon heads that people saw that were pulling people in, to obviously create some sort of Nephilim hybrid behind the scenes, but these were like the original meat sacks. Where it's like, hey, we gotta get these meat sacks up, man. Crowley probably left and came back and was like, "What
is the prototype?"
He probably like showed him what to do. Left for a couple years, came back and was like, "I leave for 2 years, and this is what y'all are doing with my creations." He's probably like flipping off the handle, man, going off at like whoever. He's like
making a bunch of mongoloids. No, that's exactly what it would be going on at these times. Man, I love that because I kept reading about it too, and I've heard people talk about it, and they always say Dr. Crow, but I never made the connection with Crowley. I didn't even, because I think sometimes we forget this when people were around in the 1800s, I think it's like our mind blocks out that, hey, they could have still been alive less than 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, Crowley's not like long
no,
gone.
No, man, we're only talking
like, I mean, he wasn't like years and years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that long. So,
And there was no UFO. Yeah, man, the UFO thing blows my mind. I think, man, that blew my mind, man. I think it's been a minute since you really stumped me to a, like what I'm like, wow, man, I don't even know what to say anymore.
Yeah, man, I knew we were going to have a blast today, man. Anytime we get on cryptids, man, I'm going to get in my bag, like especially with fallen entities. They somehow find their way like into this piece of it. But this episode is an absolutely perfect example. If you're a new listener, of how we connect all the threads. We literally connected government. We connected psyops behind the scenes. We connected the occult, and we connected cryptids. It all interconnects, guys. It becomes a massive jigsaw puzzle that you're putting together slowly, and you may only get a quarter of the jigsaw puzzle done before you're dead, but man, you got more together than most people did. Some people don't even know there is a jigsaw puzzle.
I really think though we should hit up Juan and be like, and maybe you can help him figure out, be like, hey, how does fallen angel say, how do you translate dog dick in fallen angel language? You know what I mean? Maybe that's in like the problem they were having for a little bit. But But yeah, we had a blast, man. And again, you know, we like to tell you guys, you can hear this live in your face in Ohio. So if you're in the Midwest area, hit up killthemockingbirds.com. Click on 40 and Airways, October 6th, 7th, and 8th. And guess what? Maybe you can't come out the 6th. The main, I think most of the bulk of the podcasts are going to be on the Saturday. So maybe you go, hey, don't worry, come out on the 7th. Have a good time. And then of course, enjoy your stay and then have an early morning breakfast with us. And we'll all just, you have a panel. You could talk and ask questions. I think we're going to limit some of you guys because after some of these flat earth comments we get, we might have to give you guys like a 1 minute timeline or something, or you guys are going to yell at us for like 3 hours.
Yeah, I think most people that are going to come to see us, man, even if they are flat earthers, man, they'll leave us alone, man. Like,
yeah, I love the flat earthers. Yeah. So I just love giving a hard time. Because it's because there's a few of you that get so upset and write these novels. And then I'm like, well, I got to keep making fun of you because it's making me laugh.
It's never
going
to stop. Like, here's the thing. And I joked about this to Juan and you off air. But I was like, listen, man, if I found out that the earth was flat, like I just knew, like, yeah, it's flat, guys. I would still say it's not because you guys get so worked up. Like, it's more fun watching how mad you get and writing absolute novels that nobody's reading. Like, we're not reading. We don't have time. I don't even have the time to write all that, much less. But here's the thing. Like, we do research, guys. And as a matter of fact, this is only known by Juan and Sean, and now you guys are knowing it too. I'm doing an in-depth, deep dive on the PSYOP of Flat Earth. And I'm going to have, I've got a bunch now, but I want to do an absolute banger of a presentation here in a few months where at least I can show the antithesis of, because here's the thing, anybody can believe one thing, but there has to be an opposite of it. There always is an opposite of anything you believe, and there'll always be valid points on the other side. So I think to get a full view of anything, you have to. The issue with flat earth is these guys do a lot of research, and what they do is they run up on people who just have been taught their whole lives that the earth's round, and they look at you like you're stupid. I don't think you're stupid. I think you've done a lot of research, but I do think a lot of that research is very flawed. But I want to be able to come to you with, and I've got a lot of knowledge now, but I'm going to have a thorough presentation on the counterpoints to everything, even biblically, because that's very important in this flat earth space. But that's coming, guys. I will have that for you, and I don't know what platform I'm going to do it on yet or anything, but it's going to be ridiculous, and it's going to be a good one, and you can listen to it hopefully with an open mind and be like, you know what, maybe I'm not all the way right with this, and maybe you walk away with it like, yeah, I still believe it's flat, which is cool too, but at least you like listen to an opposite reaction. Because listen, as much as you guys think we haven't, we've all looked into flat earth a lot. We're not in this space to not do that. So we definitely have. I've seen tons of documentaries and read tons of stuff about flat earth. Yeah. It's not that we haven't done the research, like people say. No, we've done the research.
Maybe for that one, we could sell something online in the merch store of like some kind of like butt clincher. You know what I mean? Like, it's like it clinches it for you, makes it a lot easier to get through the episode. You know, just a clinch, boom, you're good.
Right, exactly.
But I think also, don't forget to check out Joel Thomas, Sean Chris on all music streaming platforms. And also, because we're going to go out today, I think of this, and I think we're going to probably maybe the end of the month or whatever we figure, maybe the end of the year, whatever the hell we feel like. But if you don't know, we've talked about it a few times. Joel has a soundtrack for the Shape of Shadows documentary that has been out. I am featured on it. A couple other people are featured on it. But I think that we should go out today with a song that I really personally like, and I know a lot of people like it too, Lights on the Mesa.
Yeah, I agree with that. And before we get out of here, though, Sean, I have gone in a week without talking to Jen Psaki or texting Jen Psaki. I feel free, man. I feel like I'm free. I feel like I'm kind of in a new space. I'm looking for a new ginger, you know, elite. You know, it's got to be elite, man, because we got to have that pure blood Nephilim children. But, you know,
No Donnas from from Wisconsin.
Hey, if your name is Donna and you're from Wisconsin, we love you. Really, we do. There's some lady right now driving in Wisconsin loving our show. She's like,
what the
fuck? Are you kidding me, man? I hate those guys now.
No, I think you're right. I think it's a good, you're doing good, man. You know, You're going to find her. She's there somewhere. There's got to be another elite Nephilim redhead.
It's got to be, man. Somewhere. It's got to be. So, you know, I've gotten, you know, off the sake juice. You know, I think I've done pretty good. You know, I'm not doing any sake bombs. So, you know, anything related to sake, anything, man. I drove by a Japanese restaurant and I didn't even go in. Because I was like, you know what? If I go in there, I'm going to see sake, like the drink, and it's going to make me think about her. Man,
you're going to be triggered. But I got an idea, man. What if the listeners could help us? Not only give us a 5-star review, but maybe they can leave a comment and a suggestion of that ginger that might be for you.
Oh, man, I would appreciate that, man, because I just need help. Like, it's hard, man, because, I mean, dude, like, we were dating, and a lot of people didn't know that, man, like, the past, like, bit. And, you know, I know some people heard the call that we had last week. That was unfortunate that she called me during the, you know, show, but it happened, and, you know, we had to kind of have that conversation. But, yeah, I'm moving on, man. I'm moving on.
Well, you know how we do it here. Wake the fuck up or get woke the fuck up.
Brat! Brat!
Bird killers!
When I look at the heavens, glow from the brush strokes, leave a different impression. Behind the holy water, all I'm seeing is devils. Used to stop at the sixes, now I push to the sevens. This is my confession. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The lights around me beckon. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm lost in my reflection. No, no, no. I ain't trying to go away, yo. I don't know if I'm caught up in the lights on the mesa. They're so bright, makes me think about life. And the desert that's swallowing me whole. I'm just trying to cruise on a trail. But I know that my screw is written in a way that won't make it easy for me, I know. When people look at me, they look for something they can define. I just never knew a box I couldn't decline. I never thought of being one of a kind. I just spent my time elevating my mind. This is my confession. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The lights around me beckon. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lost in my reflection. No, no, no. I ain't trying to go away, yo. I don't know if I'm caught up in the lights on the mesa. They're so bright. Makes me think about life. Swallowing me whole. I'm just trying to cruise on a trail. But I know that my screw is written in a way that won't make it easy for me. I know.
And I know you don't know my truth. I spend my youth wasting my lose. But now.
The lights on the mesa, they're so bright.